But a specific scenario that comes to mind is we have never had a pilot miss the birth of a child. So when you think about pilots being on the road all the time and starting young families, we actually had a scenario where a pilot's wife went into labor early. He was out on the road, and we authorized him to take the PC-12 and fly it empty with his co-pilot to a airport that was near the hospital where his wife was going to be giving birth, and he walked in just in time to see his kid be born.
If you're listening to this episode, there's a high probability that you're a pilot who needs to build some time and looking for some direction on the best path to take. Here at AvicAir, we're big on building quality experience while building time. Because in preparing the freshly minted 1,500 plus hour pilot for their final interview at a major airline or corporate gig, we ask them to call upon their experiences to exemplify the interview pitch of their virtues and attributes. And what we find is that it takes some serious thought and even sometimes a stretch of the imagination to find a scenario where the pilot excelled at the soft skills from phase two of their career that shows that they went above and beyond the job description. The jobs that are considered stepping stones are temporary for a reason, and that is because they don't pay nearly as much or have as much job security as that of a major or legacy airline. The reason for that is because they're operating in a much lower profit margin in industry sectors that are highly dependent on external circumstances. As a result, there are some pretty sticky situations that pilots will encounter in terms of perceived pressure. In other words, pilots will be asked to initiate flights with crew members that have zero commercial or leadership experience, operate in weather that is below their comfort levels, and fly aircraft that have been maintained by mechanics who are also in the career development phase in order to help the company make ends meet. Oh, and let's not forget about the stack of resumes of pilots lining up behind you, waiting to fly in questionable weather or aircraft to do your job for less money in case you're too chicken to complete the quote air mission, just to build the flight time. And while we're being frank, when you get to the major airline interview and present a resume containing experience from an operator or an operation that has a history of producing pilots that have given that airline headaches, you will have an uphill battle trying to convince them to hire you. And this is why we're interviewing Scott, the assistant chief pilot from PlaneSense, who has been with the company for many years and has also held position in human resources conducting the interviews himself. If you're lucky enough to score an interview at a major airline and have PlaneSense on your resume, their eyebrows will raise in a good way. In this podcast, we will dive into why PlaneSense, then ask Scott some insights that will help you navigate the tough questions that can arise on an interview to help you increase your odds of getting hired, and then finale with how to increase your odds of passing the new hire training at the company. This episode is brought to you by My Home Quarters. It's our very own aviation family real estate company that is brokered by Real Broker. Work hard, be kind. Here is a word from our sponsor.
There are very few industries that require its employees to relocate as much as aviation. You earn your money while strapped into a cockpit of a vehicle that is always on the move, and we get that. My Home Quarters has a nationwide network of aviation-savvy realtors who understand the nuances of what pilots need. Why? Because we vet and train them ourselves. There's nothing like working with an agent who gets the living scenario for a Part 135 pilot or the 121 airline life. We can help you address your sanctuary that meets the short call requirements and connect you with our lenders who understand the unique pay scales in aviation. Head over to myhomequarters.com and contact us if you have an upcoming relocation or know a friend who needs to buy or sell their home anywhere in the country. The best part of My Home Quarters is that we reinvest some of our proceeds back into our aviation company that sole purpose is to improve your quality of life. These podcasts, training videos, career prep, and innovative initiatives can all be viewed at avicair.com. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the podcast. Talk soon.
Hey there.
Hey, how's Scott. Going? Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. You got me loud and clear?
I do. How am I?
Perfect. You sound great.
Awesome.
So, First of all, thanks for joining me on a little podcast adventure here. Have you ever done a podcast before?
Personally, no, I've never done one. It's first time doing one. So I have seen them done before. I've subscribed to some of them myself. So I know what they're about, but personally never been involved.
Okay. Yeah. So sometimes it can be a little nerve-wracking because other people may be listening, right? But it's good to know that the audience that would take the time to listen to a podcast like this, they're aspiring pilots, right? So, and this is your specialty. This is my specialty, helping young folks, or older folks, whatever, pilots of any sort, try to break into the industry and find a path and make a living, you know? So,
I think I gotta say, I wish that these things existed when I was looking to, you know, join the industry. It was a lot more difficult back then to try to find the right way to do things.
Yeah. So real quick, before we get into plane sense, I just kind of want to outline, there's going to be three major chunks to this. I'll try and keep us on track the best I can. I got some notes here. We'll talk about, you know, why plane sense first, and then we'll kind of get into how to get into plane sense if someone's interested in that. The interview process and some maybe pitfalls and different things like that you've experienced. And then once people get hired, the third section will be, how do they succeed? And where do you see pilots struggling with the new hire onboarding process, things like that, that maybe somebody who's listening, they have, you know, 250, 300 hours, they're just starting out. They're looking at, which path should I take? And then maybe we can nip some of these issues in the bud for them early on, you know, via this podcast. So, but before we get into that, I would like to kind of ask you, like, what's your position at podcast or at Plain Sense, and how did you get in there, and what have you been doing lately?
Sure. So, well, for the listeners, my name is Scott Birdie. I am one of the assistant chief pilots with the company. I've been with Plain Sense for 17 years now. So, quite a long time. I've seen it develop from a small company into the larger incorporated company that it is today. I started actually as a CFI up in the Northeast. And after being a CFI for a little while, I started doing some contract work in a Piaggio. Back then, it was the 2007, 2008 kind of era where the economy was about to tank. So I had a board interview for an A-10 slot. It fell through because of some Air Force base closures. They didn't need anybody for a new F-15 mission that they were taking on, getting rid of their A-10s. And as a result, I didn't get my board interview. So I ended up having to find a civilian job, and that is how I found Plain Sense. I've been here ever since. I haven't even thought about going to the military since then. It's just been a great place to work. I'm happy to be here.
So how did you find Plain Sense? Was it through an online job board, or was it a conference, or?
So actually back then it was just word of mouth.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting twist. I actually know of a helicopter operator who it was all word of mouth and the good old boy system, you know, and they ran into some equal employment opportunity violations. And they got hit with some hefty fines, almost went out of business. And since then, you know, they have to interview certain amount of pilots, even though they may have their preferred candidate already picked out, they're still required to interview so many other people and consider them, you know, ranking their applications on scoring and competencies and different things like that. So it's the industry is definitely evolving. It's definitely fun being a pioneer of sorts in the industry. I started in 2004, 2005 as well, and I found myself as a CFI during that whole 2007 and 2008 recession all the way till 2010. And so, yeah, it's nice talking to somebody who can have an appreciation for the struggles, the good old days, we'll call them.
yeah, for sure. Yeah, everybody wasn't hiring back then. It was really tough to find a job, and you know, even the salaries back then were completely different from what companies are offering pilots now. I mean, I guess supply and demand with the pilot shortage that everybody talks about, was in full effect. But yeah, it's a different industry today than it was just a short time frame ago.
Yeah. I always like to explain the waves, the macro and the micro waves, the hiring cycle waves. You know, it was like what, a generation and a half ago that airplanes were even invented, right? Like
Right.
Howard,
Yeah.
Howard
Really.
Hughes, you know, TWA and Pan Am and all those guys, those are still working. Those pilots in the end of that hiring wave to fill the first airlines invented, those guys are retiring now, starting kind of like 2017, 2018 is when those folks started
Right.
being,
Yeah.
being
Great.
aged out, right? So you have this overarching 2017 to 2032, 2035, somewhere in there is kind of this is this 10 to 15 year span, you know, that's happening. And then within that, as we're all experiencing now, there's micro cycles, right? Like the Pratt and Whitney engine issues are grounding a bunch of planes on the A320s, and Boeing is having some struggles, and economy and political elections and recession issues, and there's just so many different micro hindrances that are happening right now on the macro. So it's fun to watch, and I think for everyone listening, like the best thing to do is to be prepared so that when the gates open up fully, you can jump in on the front half and the front segment of a hiring micro accelerated wave, and then you can boost your seniority significantly within like a 1 or 2 year period. You can cover 20 years of historical growth, because I think right now, like they're even right now, there's airlines that are hiring, one airline is hiring more pilots in 1 year than all the airlines would hire in 1 year historically during the 2008, 9, 10 lulls, you know? So
yeah.
While it seems like people are saying that the pilot shortage is over, really it's just a deceleration to the accelerated macro wave. But one thing's for sure, if you don't have a seat by early 2030s, life is going to be as it was back in the 2007 and 2008s when the macro goes away.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
and,
So as you, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but as what I kind of want to say, this is a great segue into saying where PlaneSense started and how it's evolved and where it's at now. And why would you say the best reasons to work for PlaneSense are? What does PlaneSense have to offer, you know, the pilots looking at a career there?
Yeah. So just in general, kind of like what sets PlaneSense apart in our industry is what I gather from that question. So love to talk about that. I think primarily it's our culture. When you think about how PlaneSense originated, you know, 29 years ago, 1996, I think it was when we first started. It was one airplane as a club sort of flying airplane. It developed into a fractional ownership deal. And today we have over 250 pilots. We now have 44 PC-12s, I believe. 13 PC-24 jets. We've evolved from that one airplane into an incorporation of five companies that are all included under the PlaneSense Incorporation. And through all that growth, we've somehow managed to maintain the culture of it being and feeling like one big family. It's maybe not quite as tight as it was back in 1996, just, you know, just from the dynamics of being bigger, but I am confident in saying that it's probably tighter feeling family than most other companies of a similar size. We take care of our people for sure. We feel like if we take care of our people, that they'll take care of the company. So we just think about like the vast nature of the amount of people that our operation affects. It's quite humbling. You have an employee group of over 500. We have 250 pilots plus, like I said, but the whole company as a whole has over 500 employees. So all of those employees have families, and they're all depending on us to be successful so they can support their individual families. We also have the owner client group, you know, the people that we fly, and that's a massive group of people, and they also have families, and they're all depending on us to get where they need to go for their business needs, so their businesses are successful, for their family, individual needs. And we truly believe that taking care of our people is directly related to the overall success of the company. And that's sort of what I think that set one of the things anyway that sets Plain Sense apart in the industry is the culture and how we've managed to kind of maintain that family atmosphere as we grow. And so that's something we look for in the interview is, will this person or this potential pilot fit in to that culture and promote that culture as well? Because we are continuing to grow and we continue to want to keep that sort of atmosphere in the company and that culture into the future. So as we grow, we want the pilots to grow with us and keep that reputation.
I'd love
I
to.
can talk. Go ahead.
No, I'd love to kind of ask for a specific scenario on that. Kind of like how what the pilots all go through. Oh, but tell me a specific example. So I'm going to put you through that same one, I guess. What's when you say take care of people? Like, what specific scenario comes to mind? A pilot had needed some help from the company, and you guys took care of them, or what comes to mind on that?
Sure. I mean, I can think of a specific scenario. Like we have quite a few younger pilots. Not necessarily like starting out. We have pilots who are just starting out. We also have pilots who are, retired from the airlines and staying here for their finishing out, their career, so to speak. But a specific scenario that comes to mind is we have never had a pilot miss the birth of a child. So. When you think about pilots being on the road all the time and starting young families, we actually had a scenario where a pilot's wife went into labor early. He was out on the road, and we authorized him to take the PC-12 and fly it empty with his co-pilot to a airport that was near the hospital where his wife was going to be giving birth. And he walked in just in time to see his kid be born. And that's just, one of many examples of how I think the company goes above and beyond to help out its people. And that's kind of one that just sticks out initially here.
That is a very magical story because and can I draw a contrast story for you?
Sure.
I know a particular pilot who he's in HR at a well he was in HR at a major airline. And his child was being born, his first. And he asked for some time off and they said, yeah, okay, we thanks for letting us know and everything like that. And it seemed at the surface that they also take care of their people. 8, 9 months later, when the child was actually born, the pilot took some FMLA. Well, they couldn't they the app the way that they call out is through like a digital scheduling app, right? So there's a couple of different options in there. You can use sick time or you can use emergency time, things like that. And the emergency button wasn't available because this pilot was on his way to the hospital, and the emergency button only becomes available like when the trip starts, not beforehand. So you have to kind of use the sick button and then get it recoded to emergency later. Well, the pilot it was like a 2 4 days, yeah, like 4 days and then a 2 day and then another 4 day on his schedule. And so he called out for all of those 8 days back to back because he had the child and wanted to be home with the baby. And he got flagged for dependability. A dependability issue was flagged and the pilot was retaliated against and removed from the HR interview team, one of my colleagues. And
Wow.
so and so for you to say that you actually let them take the plane and fly to the hospital at on the comp did you make them pay for it or did Plain
No,
Sense?
absolutely not. No,
Yeah.
no.
Okay. So that's th this is a massive contributing factor to what it's like to work for a company who cares about their employees.
Yeah, and I mean, we have several examples that are like that. It might not just be with kids, but I can think back to 2008 and 2009 when Several companies, airlines were furloughing massive numbers of pilots. We only furloughed in our entire history. So in this 29-year history that we have, seven pilots in our entire history were furloughed. And all seven happened to be back during that economic recession. All seven that we furloughed were called back within a year.
Oh, that's great. That's good.
So in that kind of history, yeah, only seven pilots on furlough and all called back within a year. So I think that's another thing that sets us apart. We can get into it a little later, but one of the big things that sets us apart from other companies as well is most of our upgrades and advancements within the company are all based on merit or heavily weighted on some merit, on merit anyway, and not necessarily seniority with the company.
Oh, wow, that's good. Can you give me an example?
Sure. So, sort of the career progression here at PlaneSense would be you come in as a first officer in the PC-12. That's what you're hired into. And then from there, you would want to upgrade to be a PC-12 captain. Maybe you want to be an instructor pilot. Maybe you want to be a check airman. Those advancements, as long as you qualify, are done based on merit, not when you reach the seniority level. So, you go to an airline and there's a waiting line for when you're going to upgrade to captain, and that's all based on your seniority number. But here at PlaneSense, it's more of your name is what you make it. So if you come in, you do a good job, you're on time, people like to fly with you, they can spend 7 days at a time with you out on the road, you're a good pilot, you're a good ambassador for the company, all that stuff will get you into the upgrade process. As soon as your time permits. So if you come in with 1500 hours and you are in good standing with the company and you are ready to upgrade, then we're gonna get you into that upgrade process even if you're relatively new to the company compared to somebody else who might not do as great of a job or might not be as good of an ambassador as you are. The merit is what really sets your advancement within the company. And that plays over into the jet as well, because we upgrade into our jet program from within the PC-12 ranks. And so that is one thing that we will look at seniority numbers for. Just when your time to go to the jet comes is based on your seniority number. But there's also the caveat that you have to be in good standing with the company. So you can't just come in, slack off, and wait for your seniority number to hit to get into the jet. You still have to, do a good job.
Oh, that's good. So it's like a coupled, like a seniority plus merit. Can you define slack off for me just a little bit? What are some of your pain points with current line pilots, whether they be new or tenured? What are some of the things that kind of can get people off that shiny list?
Sure. It's a customer service aspect side of things. So, we weigh heavily on customer service. Our pilots are the ambassadors of the company, is the way we like to see it. When you think about fractional ownership, right, that's private aircraft sales. So we are servicing people who buy into a program and they essentially own the asset. They own the airplane. So it's their private jet, it's their private airplane. When they're dealing with the sales team, it rarely do they ever meet the sales team in person. It's all done through email, phone call, maybe some video conference. But the first time that they're ever seeing a representative of the company and experiencing the company is when they meet the pilots on their first flight. So we need pilots who are not only great pilots and flying capabilities, flying the airplane well, but also people who have those people skills, those interpersonal things where they can present issues that might arise throughout the day with weather, or maybe an aircraft mechanical happens and you have an AOG after startup or something, and your back seats are full of passengers. And so they have to deliver that news that they might not be able to take them to their destination today, and in such a way that is, I guess for lack of a better term, nice and for and be able to deliver that news with an elegant touch to it. So it's not, no, we can't take you, but we are doing our best to find an alternative, something like that. And some people just do it better than others. And sometimes some pilots you ask for, like this with a slacking off example, without getting like too detailed, you know, we have pilots who, you know, might not have, you know, maybe made an owner or a client mad by not delivering news as elegantly as they could have, or maybe being a little rough around the edges sometimes.
Can I just ask you, does plain sense, so this is obviously a soft skill that you're screening for during the interview process. It's a pretty good segue into our second section here. You want to bring somebody on who has those kind of soft skills to deal with the customers in this elegant way. Do you have any kind of internal training that you provide, or is this kind of something that you feel is like nature versus nurture? They got to come in already with the, you know, possessing these skills.
Yeah, we have a little bit of training when it comes to that, but not much. But this is really kind of dependent on the person, and if it's it is something that we screen for in the interview process.
So you might be kind of excited about this little program that I've been putting together to develop soft skills. I think it kind of helps to explain the four phases of the career, which I kind of coined myself, I guess. Phase one being the technical training. This is your flight school, zero through fully certified, ATP, if you will. There's also phase two, which is, so basically you'll have like a CFI who has a couple hundred hours, right? 200, 300 hours, and they're working as a CFI. There's all kinds of things. Like you said, there's maintenance issues, there's weather issues, there's personnel issues, things arise, right? And where you have to take your technical skills, apply them to an airplane, and treat it as a business for a profit, right? And that's phase two. Phase two is your soft skill. This is your time slash experience building phase. Phase three is kind of what you and I are talking about right now. Phase three is interview preparation. Phase three is essentially, it's like a marketing degree, if you think about it. It's like a sales and marketing degree. You're trying to sell your phase one and two skills and abilities and present them in a way that doesn't sound like egotistical or I'm tooting my own horn, and I'm actually explaining to the employer, to the interview team, what they're looking for, that as it relates to my experience versus what they need in a pilot. And then phase four is after they get hired, how to not wash out of new hire training, and then how to progress through the ranks as you've done up to, you know, in whether it be management, assistant or chief pilot, or maybe it's in the safety department or the training department and working your way all the way to director of training, or maybe you enjoy business and you want to get into the C-level side of things. That's all phase four. So what you're talking about is phase two, and you guys are screening for phase two skills, right? Would you say that your interview process leans more toward soft skill inquiries, like tell me a time stories, trying to sample their soft skills, or would you say that it's more on the technical aspects? What makes a good landing, or how do you detect in-ground effect, or tell me about an approach procedure, or is it kind of 50-50?
I would say it's 50-50. I mean, it's we kind of look for that well-roundedness in a pilot. You know, you got to have it all. We do some pretty hefty technical screening, but our HR interview is pretty robust as well, to talk about these, say, soft skills, and screen for these soft skills. I can kind of tell you a little bit about the interview process. It starts with a virtual tech interview. So once your application has been approved and reviewed by several different people, it will go to a tech interview process where you basically have a Microsoft Teams platform, where you will have a video chat with one of our pilot recruiters, and you'll be asked a bunch of technical questions, based off of some Jepsen IFR charts. It'll last maybe about 30, 45 minutes, kind of just depends how quickly the questions get answered. But yeah, that will screen for technical knowledge of approaches, procedures, departures, arrivals, how to pick up clearances and uncontrolled fields, minimums, things like that, which everybody's pretty savvy to, because the airlines were doing the same thing for a while. I don't think they do that anymore, but I think they incorporate it a little bit in their current interview process, through most of them, I think, are doing a academic type test, but we're just doing it as a virtual tech interview. And then once the tech interview is passed, then we will bring you for a in-person interview. The in-person interview will include that HR evaluation that we were talking about, and that'll also include a simulator evaluation. Yes, we still do a simulator evaluation. I know many of the airlines were doing this back in the day. I think they stopped doing that as well. Maybe there's a few out there that still do it. I don't know. But we definitely still do it. And the reason that we do that is because we get a lot of challenging flying. It's very dynamic. We will fly VFR into a grass airfield, and then we'll take off from that grass airfield, and we could go to somewhere like JFK right after that. It's kind of a testament to what the PC-12 and PC-24 aircraft are capable of doing. Basically everything, from flying to grass to keeping up with the big boys going into JFK. We'll be flying on last minute flight requests into mountainous terrain at night in a blizzard at an uncontrolled field. So extremely challenging IFR type environments. And because of that, we want to screen the pilots to make sure not only are they technically ready, but also are they also ready to handle that with passengers who might be afraid of flying and into those challenges. So the interview process as a whole, I think, is robust. We've developed it over a long period of time, and I think that it has proven itself on several occasions. And it's not easy, but it's something that I think anybody who prepares themselves for are able to do well at.
Where do you find in the technical screening portion of the virtual tech screening, what would be the number one weakness that you guys are seeing, maybe causing people to wash out of that phase of the interview?
Sure. So I used to do, a lot of the tech interviews. I don't do them as much anymore. It's kind of been delegated to the pilot recruiters at this point, just because we have so many. But I do remember from the years that I did those tech interviews that it always surprised me, like how many pilots didn't know the proper IFR procedures. A lot of them would have like a kind of a rote knowledge from the local flying that they did, but they couldn't really expand that and apply it to other airports and other approaches that they maybe weren't used to. So things like what to do when an ILS glide slope flags in the middle of an approach come to my mind. And then I remember in the sim interview, a lot of times people were washing out for just BAI flying or intercepting and tracking on missed approach procedures. That was where a lot of the folks were failing out. I don't do the HR interviews that often, but I have seen people show up in jeans or just looking like they rolled out of bed just a minute ago. Maybe they were chewing gum. They usually don't get high scores when you see that. But yeah, a lot of the tech interview and the sim interview stuff was a little surprising as to like the things people were failing out for.
Well, it's the FAA's examination process is weak at best, right? I mean, it takes a couple of years, a year and a half maybe, to get through all of the ratings, and then they sample what, like an hour worth of things
Right.
in the flight exam. Call it less than 10%, maybe 1% of the actual knowledge. And so what you find the weakness in phase one is they're training to pass a check ride instead of survive in real life scenarios, complex complex IFR and diverse weather environments like PlainSense has, right? So do you have, and please don't mention them now, but do you have a preferred list of schools that you like to hire from? Because generally they're doing quite well.
We do. Yeah, we have we have several different flight schools that we actually have hiring agreements with. And we do have some flight schools out there that are clearly giving us a product that is very much more successful in our line of work. And we're seeing it out of some specific flight schools, yes.
Okay, well, that's a published pathway that you have, right? You have public documentation on that?
It is, yeah, it is a pilot pathway. It guarantees them an interview based on the criteria is different for different flight schools, but yeah, those pathways do exist.
Okay, well, since it's public info, what are the flight schools at this point in time?
Oh, there's a lot of them. We could spend a lot of time doing it.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this then. I'll have you, if you have a link to any of that information that you send out, if you share that with me, I'll create a little blog article with this podcast embedded in it, and then people can just get a full access to all those links on there. Okay,
yep.
Sounds good. So they can look for that on the avicair.com website. I'll put a link right on the homepage for it.
Sure. Yeah. And that's a great pathway to take advantage of. It's right now, things are extremely competitive. We have over 2,400 pilot applications in our system. We're currently putting maybe 8 per month in a new hire class. That number might reduce for the rest of 2024 as we start to focus on internal PIC upgrades. I mean, we'd love to hire 50 pilots a month if we could, but everybody's got a training capacity. And we don't want to get backed up too far on IOE, because when you start, we start getting backed up, you have new hires who come in, they train, and then they might not see the airplane for months at a time. And then, they lose a lot of that training if they're not using it. So we like to get the new hires into an airplane and flying on IOE experience and off of IOE experience within the first couple months after, their initial training. So. We don't have a backup right now. We are, less than 30 days for sure, which is good. But I know a lot of the airlines are pretty far backed up, and that's why they kind of slowed their hiring down. So, yeah, extremely competitive. So anything you can do to set yourself apart, including these pathway programs, will get you an interview. And that's right now the hardest thing to get with PlainSense is an interview.
Do you have any reservations about certain types of, because not all flight time is the same, right? No 2 hours, it's like snowflakes, no 2 hours are the same. You got time, there's a lot of different phases. You could be a CFI, you could get a bunch of SIC time somewhere early on, like as a 500 hour pilot. You could also do time building in a Cessna or a Piper flying around on the pattern. To get 1500 hours, there's a lot of ways to cut that. Right off the bat, do you have any biases against like a time builder, for example, who maybe just flew VFR the entire time?
Well, we don't hold any bias, but what we do see, this is just fact, that there's a lot of successful candidates that have a background of teaching instruments. So a lot of CFIIs are extremely successful. We see those pilots actually be more successful in the interview process than people who come from a extensive airline background, the 10,000, 15,000 hour pilot who has flown and cruised for 70 or 80% of that flight time versus the CFII who is, sort of in the soup every day. In the trenches, doing what pilots are doing or, training to do. And so we see a lot of success with that type of background. And that speaks for itself. I'm just trying to think. There's also some military guys, that came from the military and they tend to be a little bit more successful as well. I'm not sure why that is. It's just, the facts that we see.
There was one more question I wanted to ask along these lines. If someone is coming into PlainSense, right? And you guys pay it well enough to actually call it a career. And just, I mean, you've done it. You've been there 17 years, right? Like you're supporting your family, you have a cell phone in your hand, you're able to talk on it. So, you're not starving to death, right? But there's a lot of people who are, let's just say, quote unquote, using certain companies, PlainSense, Regionals, Cape Air, even low-cost carriers now are being treated like a stepping stone to get to the three legacy airlines. Do you guys, is that widely accepted that that's okay during the interview process? Or what kind of responses are you looking to hear? Like, hey, what's your 5-year plan? Or why are you choosing PlainSense? If somebody came straight out and said, hey, I want to use PlainSense for a couple of years until I meet the meet until I can be competitive to get in with one of the legacy airlines, are you frowning upon that? Or is that just a generally accepted answer that you're kind of looking for? How do you want them to respond?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing because, obviously you want people to stay here as a career. And I would just say that the structure at PlainSense exists where you could do both. You could come here and you could make it a career. You could also come here and, maybe have that plan that you're talking about of going to a legacy airline. And, we don't frown upon it. I mean, it's everybody's got their individual goals. But yeah, that's a tough one to answer. I think that I think what I would say is that if you come to PlainSense with the ambition to go to a major legacy, I actually think that the culture and the quality of life that you would experience at PlainSense might actually sell you into rethinking your career goal of going to a legacy. I'm not saying that that is true for everybody, but I am saying that I think you will see there are several people who might graduate flight school with the intent of going to a legacy carrier, and then they jump into a corporate gig like this and realize, well, maybe this is where I want to be instead. I was one of those guys. I will tell you that with full transparency that I had the intent of, staying at PlainSense for a little while until I got my time and then went to an airline. And I kind of just fell in love with the corporate industry, the freedom that it has. And, PlainSense has the amount of employees that we could qualify for a pilot union, but we don't have a union. And I kind of attribute that to the fact that the pilots don't want one because they don't need one. That means that the company is just doing the right thing. Our policies and procedures are touching all of those aspects that the pilots want. We have a pilot committee that can poll the pilot group as to what are their wants? What are their needs? What are they desiring? And then management will look at those seriously and see what they can do to satisfy those needs. So I think that speaks volumes for the company. I kind of got away from the original question of, do we frown upon people saying that they're going to go to the airlines? And no, the answer is we don't really frown upon it. I mean, we are confident in our product. We are confident in, the quality of life and the benefits and everything that we provide to the employees, to the point that I think that we can transition a mindset to wanting a career here.
Okay. Do you have any kind of, where's the best place for pilots to discover what the nitty-gritty fine details are on the quality of life, schedules and pay and benefits? And is there any kind of public link, forward-facing link that you have where they can really kind of see what life is going to be like as a PlainSense pilot on each of your platforms at each of your bases?
Sure. So this is actually an area of our pilot recruiting that we started to focus on in 2024, because we don't really have something out there that really sort of portrays the culture and everything that I'm trying to talk about here on this podcast. The short answer is, you know, what's out there online, it is going to touch on the facts. It's going to touch on the, here's what we offer for salary. Here's what we offer for PTO. Here's what we offer, you know, for soft pays and things like that, and per diems, and all of those basic data points are out there on places like Airline, Pilot Central, Climate 350, I think is another place. But we have several different locations where that kind of data is produced. But what we don't have yet, and we're working on, is giving potential pilots a resource to really feel that family culture that we are, you know, so proud of. We're if you look on Instagram, we're going to be releasing some stuff this year that I think kind of will start that process. It's going to be some meet the leadership. So you see who's doing what, who's behind the scenes of the whole program. There'll be some stuff on there from the pilots themselves, you know, and a day in the life type thing. So I think that we don't have it out there yet, so to speak, but I think that that culture feel will be out there soon, and it'll be out there in 2024. So it is definitely something that we want to do, and we are working on.
All right. So follow, and is it just the at PlainSense, or what's your handles?
For the Instagram?
Yeah.
It should just be at PlainSense.us, I think. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. Well, it's easy enough to find. If you hunt around for PlainSense and click accounts on the search, it should be one of the top results.
Yeah,
it's results.
I just looked it up. It's PlainSense.us.
PlainSense.us. All right.
Yep.
And so this is a pretty good segue now into our final segment. How to succeed, and what does PlainSense do to help their new employees? Because they might not know which airframe they're on at first, right? I mean, at some airlines, you don't know until you start your systems training which airplane you're in. How does that work? How does that new hire bidding process work? Do you give any kind of documents in advance? How far in advance can they get the flight manual, the SOPs, the memory items, whatever you need to have them studying? And then any advice you can give to a new hire pilot who may take the advice they gained from this podcast to get an actual interview, land the conditional job offer, and now what advice would you give to that person with a brand new CJO?
Sure. So, yeah, there's a several part question here, and I think I could probably talk for 30 or 40 minutes on just this one question, but I guess I'll start with the PlainSense approach to training and then career development for its pilots and how we do that. I think our training is top notch. You know, we do hand out the material before class starts, so they do have a chance to review those things, learn the limitations and you know, some of the systems. We kind of encourage you to let us teach you the systems and let us teach you all of those things, just because sometimes when you read things on your own and you're not familiar with it, it might be your first high performance airplane. You know, you can kind of go down a rabbit hole of incorrect information. Then it's harder to relearn at that point the right way to do things. But I think our training's top notch, and it's not just because I work here, and it's not just because I'm trying to sell the company. It's just another fact that we routinely hear from the pilot group when they come from other companies, or maybe they leave our company, but they still keep in touch with us. I have several pilots who have left and, you know, have just made a comment, you know, as they went to their new company and went through that training, that they really had an appreciation for what they went through at PlainSense and our training here. And the process was just top notch. The process itself, so after passing the interview and being invited to an initial ground school, that's all done in-house. So up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is where our headquarters is at, a pilot would go through their ground training there. That's roughly 2 weeks long. And then they would learn the systems. They would learn company indoc stuff, how to fill out certain forms and, how to dress and what they can and can't wear and, all the stuff that normally takes forever with an airline. But we cram it all into 2 weeks or so. And then after ground training in a classroom, they will go to what we call Mission Fit. And Mission Fit is a in-house kind of flight training device that was developed for us. And what it does is it has all of the screens essentially that are in the airplane. It's all on this one big touch screen, and the pilots can go in, they can play around with the FMS, they can play around with integrating with different systems and things like that. And what that's doing is that's just prepping them for the simulator training, because after they are done in Portsmouth, we send them on an airline flight either to Dallas or Denver, and we dry lease Flight Safety's PC-12 simulators, full motion sims. And so they don't go into the sim blind. This Mission Fit system will help them, learn how to load a flight plan and learn how to load an approach and activate an approach and how the missed approach works. And they can get their flows down in Mission Fit. So that way, they're not thrown into the fire, so to speak, and not drinking from fire hose when they go into the full motion sim, because we all know how expensive those full motion sims can be. And so that just cuts down on the time that we have to use in the full motion sim. We don't have to teach them flows. We don't have to teach them how to load approaches. We can actually focus on the actual flying of the airplane and execution of the procedures instead of that trivial stuff. So they go there well prepared for what they're going to face. And the sim training is about a week long. They'll take their check ride in the simulator. And then, they'll come back to the line as a line pilot. There'll be a green pilot on IOE. And IOE is kind of depends on how quickly they catch on to the operation and, the day-to-day. Some pilots can be off of it in as little as, 15 hours. Others can be, we've seen it as go up to 50 or 60 hours sometimes, but typically around 30 hours is the average for IOE. And then once they're off IOE, they're just on a probationary period till they hit 100 hours, and then they are a full-time regular line pilot with no restriction at that point.
Minted. Yeah.
Some new developments. So we are developing our own simulator. So we will have our own full motion simulator at some point. And that'll help big time, because we'll be able to spend a little bit more time on things that, maybe we wouldn't be able to spend as much time on if we were renting a simulator. But I think one of the big things with us renting simulators right now out of from Flight Safety is we are also dry leasing, I think I mentioned, where what that means is we use our own instructor pilots and we just rent the sim. The benefit of that is, we are the largest operator. We are larger than the U.S. Air Force right now with the amount of PC-12s that we have. So we are the world's largest operator of the PC-12. And with all of that experience, who better to teach you to fly a PC-12 than the people with the most experience flying? So
Right.
being able to use our own instructor pilots to teach you how to fly a PC-12 is essential. It's key. It's great. We can draw from experiences that we've had just out there flying the line. We can draw from experiences of interacting with the manufacturer and teach all of that, so you are well prepared out there as a pilot on the line. Another thing is our chief pilot door is always open. So kind of to transition into how training, how we view training, and then how we move into a and support career development for our pilots. Our chief pilot policy is the door is always open. I think it contributes to the culture that we talked about and harped on earlier in the conversation. It promotes safety and career development when pilots on more of a personal level, and allows us to tailor our management style to be more operationally effective. I think with an open door policy, you have more opportunities to work with pilots developing the career into what they want to make of it. And that helps with retention as well. So when you have that, the pilot being able to just walk into the chief pilot's office and talk to them on a personal level, and you know, maybe that goes back to what we talked about with me saying that we are confident that we can take a mindset of a airline bound mentality and maybe show them another door to the corporate world and change their mind to want to make it a career here. That's part of it. I think the open door policy helps that. It also helps us discover trends and other issues more rapidly. That lets us intervene a little quicker, and we can figure out solutions before they, you know, might become problems. And so I think that I know that was a long-winded answer to the question. I don't know if I touched on the entire question. If I've missed something, let me know. But I think that is how PlaneSense sort of approaches training and career development for its pilots.
No, it's you did wonderfully, and I would like to just touch right back on having an experienced instructor who has time in the actual plane, in the actual environment, being the teachers of the next generation. There's so much tacit knowledge that gets lost or not even taught in the first place by an instructor who doesn't have the actual experience with the company. I speak from personal experience. I went to a simulator company and I took a recurrent training on an aircraft that I had thousands of hours flying already in the field. And the instructor was hired by the sim company, and they had never actually even flown the actual real aircraft ever. They had experience, you know, in a different type. And then they came over to, it was a helicopter, and they came over to, they did their sim training, and that was about it. And the things that they were teaching is like, well, that's not actually how, that's not how it works. and so I think that is a huge benefit to learning how to set up the FMS and the radios and how you guys actually do it on the field. There's always talk out there like, okay, well, this is training and this is the real world. If you can bridge the gap between the two during training, I have a t-shirt I wear around that says train like you fly, fly like you train. There's just something really massively beneficial that I think that you can't even really quantify it as a new person coming in. And it sounds like PlaneSense is turning out pilots that are well-rounded and very good at their craft. You know, from screening the best of the best all the way to having them fly in the challenging environments to being trained by people who have experience in those challenging environments. It's bar none, probably one of the best, I think, opportunities out there to gain experience and maybe even just stay there working in those type of environments for long periods of time. I mean, once you have 20,000 hours in a major airline way up above all the weather at cruise, that's a whole different type of a pilot at 20,000 hours flying around PlaneSense's aircraft in the soup, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're like we were talking about with, you know, that we don't hold any bias against people who maybe just, you know, do the time building thing. But we definitely see a better success with people who are, you know, actively out there doing what pilots do or what we get paid to do.
And here's the thing, too. There's a happiness to income ratio, right? You've got to be able to support your family, however big you want to have it. That requires a certain amount of dollars. To sustain your cost of living in certain geographical regions, that requires a certain amount of dollars. To take your two or three vacations over to Europe or wherever, once or twice a year, that requires a certain amount. And then to have enough for retirement, depending on how many years you have left. Everybody's financial nest egg is different. Their income requirements are different. I will speak from personal experience. Being below the happiness to income ratio, all you can think about is how to get a job that pays enough. And then once you have a job that pays enough, you know, I work for a major airline now. Once you have a job that pays enough, and it doesn't take very long to get there, once you get into the company, 2-3 years, and according to Forbes, Forbes requires a certain amount. It suggests a certain amount for a family of four to hit all those threshold happiness goals in relation to income. But once you cross that threshold, and it's like, okay, I might buy a nicer car, but I still have a car that's new. I might buy a house with an extra bedroom, or maybe a half an acre more of land or an acre more of land, but I still have a house and a roof over my head, and your basic fundamental needs have been met, and you're still going on vacations. It become the most important thing after you cross that threshold becomes job satisfaction while you're at work, and being treated like another number, and being treated not with that family culture. It starts to create it erodes the morale of the pilot group. And once you have pilots sitting up in the cockpit, bad-mouthing the company, it can be distracting. It can be stressful. You will have cortisol pumping through your blood. And humans are individuals. You know, I mean, we don't want to be like everybody else in the crowd, although we still need to fly safely and not do anything crazy, right? Flying consistently good and consistently the same is like the recipe for longevity. But within that, if you have that family culture, taking care of your people, that becomes the most important thing after money has been cleared, if that makes any sense. So it just makes plain sense.
Yeah, it just makes sense. And yeah, like I think that the lack of seniority, so to speak, and it's not the lack of seniority, but the way we use seniority is I think, unique. Compared to the way the rest of the industry uses it. And again, helps promote that family culture. And I don't know if we talked about this, but as you say, quality of life becomes more important once your, you know, pay goals are reached. We've done a lot of efforts to keep our quality of life competitive, including, you know, opening many more bases. We're coast to coast now on the bases. We have bases all the way from Miami, Florida, all the way out to Portland and Seattle. All of our pilot bases are not based on seniority either. So like if you want a base, specific base when you're hired, whatever base you choose is the base you're going to be based at. There's no bidding for that. There's no seniority system. There's no cap on the amount of pilots that can be at that base. The only requirement for that base is that you live within 2 hours or 100 miles of whatever bases we have published. So you know, just things like that is I think some things the way we can set ourselves apart from the rest of the industry.
Well, let's close up with a couple of call to actions. Where do you prefer candidates apply? Can they apply on airline apps, or do you prefer them to go directly to plainsense.com?
Yep. So if they go to plainsense.com, we're not on airline apps, but go to plainsense.com, and then the careers tab has a place to apply right there. We encourage, if you don't hear, you'll get an auto-generated email. If we've received your application, it'll auto-generate an email that tells you we received your application. But if you don't hear about your application for a little while, we encourage you to go back on to the website, and there's also a section in that careers area to update your application. So you can update us with a new resume. If your flight time has increased since your application, you can update us with anything that's changed. It's just a link right there on the careers webpage.
Wonderful. Looking at it here, it was super easy to get to. The last thing we'll talk about is I'm putting together a phase two training course that covers all the soft skills that seems to be kind of confusing for pilots. You know, there's this misconception, oh, flight hours plus my ATP or my commercial plus ATP requirements. Flight hours equals job. It almost puts across this sense of entitlement or being privileged to walk in and get the job just because you have the flight hours. And as we talked about already, flight hours, no two flight hours are the same. They don't provide the same amount of experience. And then there's a whole another set of soft skills that's required to be profitable and successful. And you want to, plain sense, among everybody else, is, I think, kind of starving for pilots who have both the technical plus the soft skills in order to address their customers with grace and treat the internal employees as if they were customers as well. They're colleagues, right?
Yeah, they're internal customers.
Internal customers to keep those colleagues running the operation with high morale, which translates into customer satisfaction down to your bottom line customer. And so I'm putting together a phase two training course as well. And that can be found on my website at avicair.com. You scroll down right to phase two, and that's starting next month. There's a full online course written now for it. And that's a walkthrough guide. And then I'm going to use that as a syllabus and an outline to do every other week, twice a month, a in-person live coaching call. So it'll be a Zoom. We'll all be able to share cameras or hide them, whatever you prefer, but I'll be live. And students or working pilots, I should say, who are building their experience, they're building time, will be able to say, hey, a live Q&A. I ran into an AOG, aircraft on ground, and had customers on board. What's the best way to deliver it? Because they were pretty upset. And I'll go through systematic models of treating customers with the grace and the elegance, as you said. Yep. And that's going to be right inside the course. So anybody who completes that course, if you're interested in tapping that resource for some of the applicants that you have, once they've been in the course for about a year, they'll get a certificate produced. And with that graduation certificate, hopefully that will be something they could add to their resume, and plain sense may be able to suspect that they'll have the elegance that you will need. So that's the goal of the program.
That would certainly give their application a sort of pop out from the rest of them.
Excellent. So sounds like there's a couple of good options for those pilots looking to succeed here. And is there anything else, Scott? It's been wonderful talking to you. I've really enjoyed this conversation. You've exceeded all my expectations, and I appreciate you being transparent with everything. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we close it up?
No. I think we covered pretty much everything. Obviously, tough to talk about a 29-year company in an hour. But if anybody out there listening would like more information, they can reach out to one of our pilot recruiters. You can email them at careers@plainsense.com. I encourage everybody to check out, the data points and the facts that are out there as to what we offer on the different websites, but mostly come to our website and you can learn everything you need to know.
Yeah, it looks pretty detailed. So check out plainsense.com, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody in the next episode. Scott, we'll be in touch. Appreciate everything, my friend.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay, have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye.